Blog Talk Radio.
Peace to the family. You are now tuned in to the House of the Moorish King. I am your host, S.U. Miller L. My co-host will be joining me shortly. To start the show, I should remind the listeners, we deal with digitization and decentralization. If you have not, please hit the follow button. You will definitely receive some very, very good content. I'd recommend that you actually share the link right now with friends, anyone that you think would be interested in digitization as well as decentralization. That way they don't miss anything concerning this type of content. This is unique in the conscious community. So I want for everyone to know you're probably going to hear things that you have not heard before, etc. Let's go ahead and open up the call lines. Peace. Free, you on the line?
All right.
Sir. Yes, Shalom.
Harry, you there too? Shalom.
Yes, sir.
Pardon the delay, everyone. Definitely was wanting to make sure that we had everybody in the call queue before we opened up. Free. How you doing, fam?
I'm doing well. Doing well.
Good, good. I know that we've been super hectic, super busy. I definitely appreciate you, family. I know that you do everything that you can to make this work, just like I do.
Indeed, indeed.
All right. And, Harry, I'm glad to have you on the line. I appreciate you sharing a little time with us as well. You are back for the second edition of iTribe.
Correct. Thank you very much for having me. It's an extremely important time to have these conversations.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That's where we're at with this as well. You know, I wanna skip the intros, and I wanna use this time wisely. Harry, you have the floor. We are very interested in what is iTribe. How does decentralization play an effect with that? You know, what's going on? What is the message?
All right, amazing. I like how you just cut straight to the point. And as I mentioned before on your show in the first version of this conversation, you have a global phenomenon, right, of the people around the world claiming to be part of this ancient house of Israel. You know, they have different versions of what they believe in, but there's got to be billions and billions of people talking about this thing called the House of King David and the teachings of Moses. So, you know, me as an opportunist, I see that there's room over here now to take the common denominator between these billions of people to unite us, because that's just what we are, people. And so how I got into this topic is, you know, a little bit of a longer story, but I started to get emails and people reaching out from around the world, Africa, Japan, India, saying that they're from the tribes of Israel. And this was about 8 years ago. 7 years ago. So I had an idea. I said, you know, there's a lot of organizations in Israel working with these different groups and tribes and places around the world, but it's kind of scattered, you know, fractioned off. This guy does this community, this one organization does that community. I said there should be an amalgamated place, one central location where we can kind of do justice to this voice, where we can map out the villages. So we built a social network on its own called the iTribe. And basically it's a map of the world where villages are starting to log themselves in, saying that they're part of the House of Israel. Okay, so now we have these villages logging in. Right now the website's thing, but, you know, we have over 100 communities scattered from Nigeria, you know, to India, to Japan, the Caucasus Mountains, Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, you know, all the stands. And now the next step is, what do we do with these communities? Now that we're all together, right, we're on a platform, they're able to upload content to us, share their story. We're able to upload content to them, share information. What do we do next? Is it enough to socialize? Because right now we're all on Facebook, and it ends at a like and it ends at a message. How do we elevate social networks and human groups around the world? So what we did on the website is we've built a crowdfunding technology, crowdfunding per village. So every single village could have their own crowdfunding campaign, which they can finance themselves, which means if everyone in the community throws down $5, or if a philanthropist or an organization wants to contribute to a third world country, they could chip in, basically to bring sustainable technology to these communities, because it shouldn't take a deep thinker to know that we're up against an incredible battle now with the powers that be, the currency systems, the centralized forces that are basically running on our human energy but not giving back to us in the way we deserve it as humans. So the vision is to put all these communities off the grid, quote unquote, as far as electricity, technology, and food systems. But once we're doing that, it leaves a huge gap, a huge opening for what's going to be the currency of the future, right? Because now our currency is not backed by anything. It's a fake paper scam that's about to crumble on itself. And instead of waiting for that to happen, we should have something prepared. So when the fake money does crumble, whatever, system they want to put in place to try to maintain power, it could be a scary thing. We should be okay with it crumbling and have a smooth transition. So I have an opportunity. We have an opportunity. This is not a one-man show. We have an opportunity to say we have nations uniting right now. When I say nations, I mean the Pashtuns in Afghanistan numbering 25 million, the Igbo in Nigeria numbering 40 million, and scattered tribes throughout the world and villages. And these humans are looking to say, what next? What do we do now? And this is the first time we could ever be in a conversation in a room together. And there's clearly also an agenda that doesn't want us to get into the room together. If you look at the borders that separate the three nations I'm speaking about now, Israel, Afghanistan, and Nigeria, we're all dealing with one common issue. False political lines that were drawn by the British almost around the same times, and in order to create, a non-union, in order to create fractures amongst the people. So, for example, you have Israel, quote-unquote, created a state. It became a state in 1948. Only a few months before is when Pakistan became a state. People, the British, drew lines both throughout Israel and Pakistan, dividing it in half, literally, creating political scenarios with the people and creating a name that wasn't around before. So, for example, a Pakistani nation. There is no such thing as Pakistani people, Pakistani nation. There was no Pakistani flag or king 100 years ago. It was a made-up thing, and now Afghanistan is made up of Punjab people and Pashtuns. The same with Israel. And don't get me wrong, I have a lot of feelings on the Palestinian issue, and they deserve all the rights in the world, but there is no such thing as a Palestinian people. There was no Palestinian leader or flag. So these were British-created entities in order to create division. And the same with Nigeria. You see there was Biafra, which was made up of the Igbo people in the south, and in the north you had the Yoruba tribes. And what Britain did was they combined them both into one country called Nigeria and created a government, and all of a sudden it led to the genocide of the Igbo people and et cetera. So now we have nations not only claiming that we come from an ancient ancestry, but that we are all being plagued by the same powers to be, creating division, and we were trying to solve these issues on our own. But now that we're realizing we can solve them together, there's a tremendous opportunity. But there's also a blank stage, which is why I'm excited to build with you guys, because I was a little bit new to the cryptocurrency world and how to apply that to this decentralization of the global, quote-unquote, House of Israel, which is made up of many religions. You know, the Pashtuns are Muslim, a lot of Messianic Christians in Nigeria, and the people of Israel are subscribing to Judaism. So we're not going to let that get in the way of us calling ourselves a family, and the right, and the need that we have to go off a grid and empower ourselves. So we're finding ourselves now where we've mapped out a lot of villages. We have almost, 1,000-plus villages on standby trying to get on the net right now, on our network. And the question is, which is going to take a lot of brain power, what's the most strategic way to do this? But it's an evolution, and we're building.
Wow. First and foremost, I agree. I have to say, I think you did that within about 5 minutes. And I think that the reason why I point that out is anytime you deal with somebody who is talking about cryptocurrency, talking about this fintech, what tends to happen is it's a long, drawn-out conversation. And the eyes, you know, gloss over the attention span. You know, we're kind of struggling with, you know, the 10-second sound bites, right? The, you know, 3-minute, you know, videos, et cetera, on YouTube. It's a bit of a struggle trying to convey the idea of decentralization, especially when we start talking about we're going to use technology to facilitate that. Free, what do you think about what Harry said and the whole conversation concerning Bitcoin?
I wanna take it back to him talking about sustainability, because you know that was a previous campaign that I championed as well, doing Free from Chains, you know, doing all sustainable housing and Earthships, all different kinds of different gardening techniques and everything like that. So I think that to take it further with the, you know, using cryptocurrency and going off the grid at the same time is perfect. So, I mean, what you're doing with this project, bro, is awesome. I can't put it any other way than that. It's time.
Absolutely. Did you have a question, though, Free, or did you just have a comment?
Nah, no questions. I want the callers to ask the questions later.
All right. Harry, why don't you go into a little more detail? I'm very much so interested, as Free said. So sustainability, how far-reaching are you talking about? Is it just that they're growing their own food? Is it just that, you know, they have maybe their own water reclamation system? What? How far are you talking about going?
That's a great question.
Sustainability.
Right. I actually, part of my platform is I'm a landowner. I have a large plot of land in Israel in the north, an area called the Valley of Springs, which is, you know, valleys with lots of rivers and water, green land, a lot of soil. And what I've done there is created the opposite of a business, so to say. But I have a whole different, you know, different amount of different groups of people living on the land right now, different skilled people, different types of people, and they're living rent-free. I'm not charging them to live, but they're also in charge of producing for their own, which creates, you know, you got to crush the grape to get the juice. They're under the pressure to provide for themselves. And the people I have are not just random humans who didn't have a place to live. I believe I vetted out for years and years the most skilled possible people in the world of sustainability. So my team on the ground right now, they deal with the most innovative ways of electricity production. You know, first of all, they've studied a lot about Nikola Tesla, who, you know, was messing with free wireless electricity systems and tapping into the Earth's grid. We're not necessarily there yet, but these are the types of minds I'm dealing with. So as far as just, you know, solar energy, wind energy, geothermal energy, energy from algae and oils, you know, taking kinetic energy and converting it, you know, so bicycle riding and stuff, just implementing little things that holistically create, you know, empowerment. These are all the technologies we're messing with on our land right now. We're not hiring companies to do it. We're doing it in our own, with our own skills, with our own hands. We have people who know how to take care of animals in an organic, holistic way, which means, you know, we have our chickens, we got goats, we have sheep, we have a horse. I'm personally on the fence now between, you know, vegetarian, vegan lifestyle, but I'll tell you one thing's for sure. There's no question you still need animals around. Our farm had a lot of cockroaches, and then we got some chickens, and instantaneously, within a couple of days, the cockroaches disappeared. So I said, you know, maybe chickens may not be this thing that we have to eat necessarily, but they're definitely this thing that was designed to live intimately with us on land, to make land more sustainable for ourselves, where we can walk around, you know, so when the goats are walking around chewing all the weeds where snakes would be hiding, we could have little kids running and playing. So a goat is your best friend. He doesn't necessarily have to be your meal. But, you know, we're not necessarily there yet. So just to continue, so we have people who know how to take care of animals, who know how to, you know, heal them, deal with them, make sure they're doing their function on the land. Definitely have food systems as far as water filtration, learning how to take water, filter it either through algae or other natural filtrations, recycling that water between fish, vertical farming. So it's anything and everything that humans need to live, you know, growing things that you can build homes with. I know, you know, hemp is going to be the crop of the future, where you can make hempcrete, you can make concrete out of hemp, you can make fibers, all these type of things. So the team I have, which is I'm blessed with, you know, you couldn't Google to hire people that I'm working with right now are, I believe, the elite of the elite in their knowledge, who've done this before, who've built ecological villages before, sustainable villages, traveled around the world to learn from indigenous tribes, are now back in the land in Israel. So now that we're doing what we're doing, we're trying to make that like base camp where that system can scale out. And I'd like to reference a movement that happened in Israel in the early 1900s before it was a state called the Homa U'Migdal, which in English means the Wall and Tower Movement. And basically you had young people trying to build sustainable villages in Israel. And unfortunately, every time they tried,
their village got cut off.
I think so. We'll wait for you to chime back in. It's getting good,
yeah,
Joe.
Well, like I said, remember how we met for Free From Change, you know what I mean, doing sustainability. So,
absolutely.
So, and that whole situation with that and having to deal with all of the different entities and the counties and everything like that, and you becoming sustainable and not needing them, and then putting up a fight with you because you don't want to have an electric pole on your property, you don't want to have a well, you don't need a septic tank. So, you know, they find all these problems with you. But have you got them back?
Exactly. Perry, you back on the line with us?
Hello?
Oh, you're there.
There you go.
Good job. You can continue where you left off, Harry.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. I remember last time we had a call, I kept getting disconnected, right?
You know what? And it hasn't happened since, Harry. That's yours, I think, has disconnected enough for all the shows we've done so far.
Well, and you're all the way in Israel, and what you're talking about right now, like I was just saying, when I was doing sustainability, I ran into the counties and all of their issues of us not needing a well and us not needing a septic tank and us not needing an electric pole, you know what I'm saying? So they found issue with everything we were doing just because we didn't need them. So maybe I guess you could speak to how you're dealing with the Israeli authorities with your property. And how we can all, you know, avert this as we're becoming these decentralized communities that can become self-sustainable.
Just a second, Harry, before you answer, I want to add on. It's right in the same vein, if you don't mind.
Please.
Along the same lines of regulation, first and foremost, what are your thoughts on, you know, because I'm big on efficiency, so I'm aware that, you know, drone technology can be used in a positive manner. Especially when we're talking about manning a large farm, if you have a lot of acreage, especially with regards to efficiency, maybe one of the best tools available if we're going to monitor the farm as much as possible and know, you know, which portion of the farm needs more water or less water. You know, it's very, very useful for that. But what is the regulation like even for, we'll say, drone technology?
I mean, first and foremost, Israel, believe it or not, because when we're talking about global currencies and the powers to be, you know, obviously Israel is in that conversation, but Israel is very advanced. Israel is the host to a handful of ecological villages. Israel is also producing more than almost any other nation in the world sustainable technology. So as much as, you know, there's a bad situation going on with the world, Israel is definitely playing its role on the people side as producing solutions. And we're not running into a lot of issues on a governmental level as far as doing that going off a grid so far, which is very interesting to note. But now you referenced drones, right?
Yes.
I mean, I don't have too many opinions on it besides the fact that there's got to be transparency with what's flying over our heads as humans, right? There shouldn't be any anything that's happening on top of our head, monitoring us, et cetera, without us knowing about it. But the technology of a drone could be amazing as far as monitoring land, seeing where there's more arid areas, wet areas, what needs attention. So the technology is beautiful. It just needs to be elevated and taken out of hands that are trying to centralize us.
I totally agree with that sentiment. But yeah, you know, just to, we'll say, expand the portion of the drone and then we can move forward with the sustainability. I've actually seen a demonstration where a drone was being used in Africa to monitor the poachers that were trying to, you know, poach the rhinos. I guess they're, you know, they're almost on the brink of extinction at this point, the rhino that is. And it's obviously it's extremely difficult to monitor, you know, a vast portion of land that they're trying to monitor, in which, you know, is the habitat of the rhino, with the amount of resources that they have, right? The amount of trucks that they have, the amount of manpower that they have, it's basically impossible. However, with a basic drone and some basic cameras, you know, different kinds of sensors, whether it be like a heat sensor, they're able to monitor that and able to, you know, again, act in a way in which, you know, it's not too late, you know, bottom line. So just to move forward a little bit, I don't know if you wanted to comment on that, Eric.
No, I agree with you.
Okay. Moving forward, so tell us a little bit about energy. What kinds of concepts are you all dealing with in terms of sustainable energy? What kind of things are possible there in Israel? I'm sure, you know, some of those things are also possible here, but maybe there are some unique things there.
Definitely the now, and there's definitely the future. I don't, you know, I can't talk about the future and sound like I know that this is all accurate, but when you meet minds in Israel, they're talking about the future involving plasma energy, things that, like I mentioned again, Nikola Tesla, things that you haven't heard about since the early 1900s, and before that, you haven't heard about since ancient Egypt or the ancient people of Israel. You know, as I spoke about last week publicly, we believe that the Ark of the Covenant in the ancient Israelite Holy Temple was actually a capacitor for electricity, meaning you had two metals separated by a non-conductor with two rods on top, a positive and a negative. That was the Ark of the Covenant, Solomon's Ark, which is, in fact, if you're an electrician reading the Bible, it's a capacitor. You know, so there's books being published in Israel right now about certain, you know, magnetic forces and certain energy fields in Israel that are unique that could be tapped into to store energy and electricity. A lot of these patents by Nikola Tesla were actually taken by the U.S. government. So the means to harness free electricity from our atmosphere and discharge it, it's not a far-fetched thing, but it's not something you can go to Home Depot today and buy. But if you have the right minds thinking about it and working on it, then we're going somewhere. So in the meanwhile, we're doing very conventional things as far as electricity production goes, you know, in the world of kinetic energy, which means anytime you ride a bicycle or anytime you do any movement, if you're not converting that movement to electricity and figuring out how to store it and charging it into a battery, a central system in the community, it's a waste of a movement, so to say. So right now we're on like low-level energy productions, but my team on the ground, we're very, very, very deep into learning how to, you know, go into ancient means of channeling electricity from the atmosphere, storing and discharging it, which is going to be the future. Whether it's going to be, you know, I'm not going to use the word centralized, whether it's going to be like Nikola Tesla said, his tower that he built in Long Island was able to discharge electricity, you know, thousands of miles around it. You didn't need another station. Whether you have a few of those or every house or every community is going to be producing its own for what they need, as well as a centralized place. So it's really, we're in the unknown right now because of the forces that we're up against, you know, with the knowledge that's out there that we can't have access to. So it's a hybrid, but I'm certain the future of this is going to be free wireless electricity. As I mentioned also last week, we know the ancient Egyptians were producing electricity. You have their pyramid, the Great Pyramid of Giza, which the inside the king's chamber is hollow, lined with quartz crystal. And you got these tuning rods that when air flows up or they can channel and you know, tune the air. And we know quartz crystal vibrated at a certain frequency. I think it's something around F sharp. I forgot exactly. It secretes electricity. So we have rocks in the world that secrete electricity when certain pressures are put on them. And all of a sudden you see the ancient Egyptians building huge structures around these, you know, these materials and vibrating them. So we know they were producing electricity as well. These things are our natural rights. This is a story of humanity and human rights, our access to electricity. And, you know, we even believe that we're made up, you know, what are we made up of? We're made up of atoms, and atoms are, you know, 99% empty space almost, but have electrons flying around it. You know, we can't locate the electron, even though these flying electrical particle type of things. So this is our story. We're re-inheriting ourselves through our journey to sustainability. So like I said, you know, we're very young in on it. You know, we're like an AOL Instant Messenger, but it may evolve into something like Facebook. So, you know, what we're doing now is not what it's going to be next year, but I'm hoping we're going to get there. And like I said, you know, I threw out these terms, plasma and free wireless electricity. There's still things that we're dreaming about, but we're going to get and conquer because we know it's possible.
You know, Harry, I'm going to say something, and don't go for debate, but I'm going to say something. You know, I find you an anomaly. To have embraced your faith in the way that you have, but to still be as curious as you are concerning science and technology. And I maybe this is just a shallow thought or a statement. However, in general, you can't have the two. You know, I don't believe that personally. But it seems that public perception is you are one or the other, right? And some people, because they have seen the value of science, they have gone to the extreme and have even identified themselves maybe as an atheist, right?
Mm.
Because maybe they have certain curiosities that haven't been satisfied in their church or in their mosque or in their synagogue, in their temple. Right. Or maybe they meet outside. Right. Maybe they have, you know, some kind of traditional belief and they meet outside. And the point is I've noticed a lot of people lose faith when approached with science or when they are told that they should apply, you know, the scientific method, you know, to their belief systems. Right. They should scrutinize their faith in the same way in which they scrutinize, we'll say, objective reality. What are your thoughts on that? What are your recommendations for somebody that may be struggling with the two? You know, they have faith, but, you know, the science thing is real. At least, you know, like they can't deny it, but, you know, they're struggling. What are your thoughts?
It's definitely valid. And what you said about the church and people with religions, I mean, it's all dry. I mean, we're playing broken telephone. What religion is basically is playing broken telephone where we're trying to convey something that happened thousands of years ago in the minds of certain individuals and trying to relate to it and create structures around it. But the fact is we're totally disconnected from what those people were feeling or experiencing. And if we're that disconnected from it, we're going to have trouble understanding the value of it. So it'll come off a little shallow to us. You know, so I understand why there's a disconnect from quote-unquote God or spirituality or religion nowadays because it's completely dry. It has no value to it as far as the spirit. You know, there are cool things out there like, you know, people meditating, you know, and becoming one with themselves. That's great. That's spirit. But to have just a belief system, you know, of a redeemer that someone's going to come save and all these things, it leaves you a little empty. So I think there's one missing link, which I spoke about last week as well in New York City. Is one part of our brain that mixes the world of spirit and mixes the world of science. And I was able to demonstrate how that one part of our brain is found in the ancient cultures of Israel as well as Egypt. And that's the pineal gland. And the pineal gland, which is interesting, secretes all types of chemicals that regulate our moods, you know, serotonin, melatonin. You know, it's light sensitive. They call it the third eye because it actually has a muscle structure and somewhat of a similar shape as an eye. And there's also one chemical that secretes from it that we all know about, which is very unique. And when we dream, when we're at night sleeping, it's called dimethyltryptamine, DMT. We all have heard about it. But this one chemical, when secreted in the awake state, because there's certain cultures who are able to force that secretion to happen in the awake state, through plant extracts and certain combinations of the earth. And when they had those experiences across the board, everyone had the same emotional responses. And this goes as far as in the 1950s when you have Dr. Rick Strassman, who was working for the U.S. government and the universities doing these tests. Everyone had the same experience where they felt it was the most profound moment of their lives, where they were in touch with the source of the universe. They felt they had meaning, they redefined their life, all these things. But you know, so Dr. Rick Strassman called it the spirit molecule, I believe. And So when you see ancient cultures like Israel and like Egypt, we're very clearly able to see that they were involved with pineal technology as well as plants that have dimethyltryptamine extract like acacia wood. So when you put the whole, you know, two and two together, when you build the formula, you see that these people were experiencing extremely high states of consciousness, which was able to give them spirit, quote unquote, vision, motivation beyond the physical realm. So today, all we could do is relate to the stories about these people. So the fact that we're not feeling these things, you know, says a lot. But you're seeing a change now. Like certain celebrities today are flying to South America, where these things are legal to have these experiences, where they're starting to understand the spiritual realm. But it's all scientific because there's chemicals that are involved. It's parts of our brain. There's nothing really metaphysical happening. Nothing's coming out of the sky.
Oh, free.
Yeah.
Free. Yeah, go in.
Yeah, again.
I was saying go in.
Oh, man. Well, I want to, after he gets done, when he gets back on, he's telling us more about the DMT and everything like that and how it's more scientific and not metaphysical. I mean, the experience for the person in reality seems metaphysical for them. And, you know, the word meta means variable or, you know, so, you know, it's all up to the mind, whether the mind is experienced or not, because our mind is everything.
Harry, you're on. Just a second.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead, Brick.
Nah, our minds make everything real for us, so go in.
Absolutely, absolutely. I wanted to add on real quick. You know, we actually, Harry, I'm glad that you're back on the line with us. We actually did a show about this. We were talking about evolution and transhumanism, right? And that might be something that you might want to touch on as well. I'd be very interested on your thoughts on both, since we're talking about science, spirituality, God, etc. So, yeah, we did a show, Harry, previously, and we kind of compared the evolution of computer science with the what we were identifying as evolution. We were essentially talking about the nature of reality, and we were questioning whether it was linear or cyclical, first and foremost. We kind of came to the conclusion that it's, you know, as far as we can tell, cyclical as opposed to linear. And with that being said, we were talking about the evolution of consciousness. We were talking about how one is raised up in consciousness. If there is an evolution of the human being, that is where it exists. But not to go too far into that, I just wanted to kind of let you know what we were talking about. I'd like your take on, first and foremost, you can finish your thought. But then what is your take on evolution, as well as the concept of transhumanism, since we're merging?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I kind of was wrapping up my thought about the mind, but there's a good segue right here. You know, so as far as you really can't talk about the ancient cultures without having been to the places that they went to mentally. That's important. And now part of the centralized forces that we're up against make certain things illegal that were actually designed to help open up dormant parts of our brains. On that note, we have a dormant brain, right? What percentage of our mind are we really using? So when you speak about, you know, evolution, and let's put in some cyclical theory over here. I believe personally, according to my Judean teachings, that humans were once accessing, you know, their full mind at one point in history, where we've descended and now we're going to re-get there. So there are patterns that happen. But interesting enough, so you speak about transhumanism, because you see it happening today. You know, our soul doesn't age, just our body ages, but our body is very replaceable and it can be trained and conditioned. We actually believe from the Torah, quote-unquote, Kabbalistic point of view, that there's a set amount of years until a certain state of consciousness dwells upon mankind. If you guys are curious, I can get into that timeline with you of where we are holding on the timeline towards consciousness. But once that period of consciousness hits, we believe we go through 1,000 years of like an evolution, you know, humanity, where we're evolving in the mind and on earth. And then after that 1,000 years, there's kind of an evolution out of the human experience, but still in the realm of consciousness. How to understand that today, I'm not sure, but the modern day theories like transhumanism and other things are actually somewhat aligned with ancient Kabbalistic teachings about what happens to us as time moves forward. So it's interesting when different groups like ourselves get together and put our teachings on the table and see what the common themes are and still stay within the realms of reality without speaking about, you know, aliens coming down and giving us a high five.
I hear you on that. You know, actually, again, just for the listening audience, they can definitely hear the dialogue that Free and I had by going to Moab, that's MOAB BIT on YouTube. And you're going to want to look under the Silk Road playlist, and you will actually be able to find that. Harry, you know, seeing as we're talking about, you know, consciousness and what have you, you know, I want to lay something out about what we've done at Free. I want you to kind of make a comment as well, if you like. So we have come to the same conclusion concerning, I think they are called entheogens, certain plants, natural plants, herbs, etc., that are used to alter one's state of consciousness. And, you know, we definitely have done the knowledge to that. We've seen a lot of the different discourse that's available to the public about the different studies that have been, you know, conducted concerning this. What I want to say is that we call the podcast The Silk Road for a reason. We actually attempted on a virtual level, on a very basic level, to recreate the Silk Road. So it's as if the listener can travel upon the Silk Road and learn these valuable lessons that come from different areas. So two things I want to point out, and it's all in reference to decentralization. The first thing is what you're describing, Harry, on a spiritual level, if people are experiencing God, the Creator, whatever it is name that they call it by, that is a decentralized concept because, in general, God is one, yes, but he is separate from all of us, right? This is the perception or the common concept or approach that is brought to this conversation in general. You and the Creator are separate is the general consensus. And with that being said, if you experience that, then you represent something like, you know, Jesus will say, which is a separate individual, an individual unto themselves. And again, that is a centralized concept. But what you have described on a spiritual level is actually a decentralizing of spirituality. Do you follow where I'm going with that?
Yes, definitely. We have huge misconceptions about the Creator of the universe.
Absolutely. And then furthermore, when I'm describing the nature of the Silk Road does not exist in one location. It does not just exist in Palestine, right? It's not just Hebrews, and I don't say that to, you know, be offensive. It's just to say that there are Buddhists, right? There are Muslims, right? There are Hindus. There are, as you said, the Shinto, right? Those that were dealing with the philosophies of Confucius. Right, there are many different, how should we say, ways in which, you know, the human being comes to the Creator, right? And with that being said, that is a decentralized educational system. This is actually what we have demonstrated. I referenced in our first show, had you read or were you familiar with the Aquarian Gospel? And again, I said this was the missing 18 years of Jesus. And what you find is a Hebrew, right, very astute in his own teachings, able to interact with those of other faiths, right, find the truths in those other faiths. Not that he would lower himself to accept, you know, any kind of idolatry, right, or any kind of pagan worship or anything like that. However, he could, with an open mind, find that silver lining. And again, this is just to point out the nature of a decentralized educational system. I wanted to reference that, Harry, because my thing is I think decentralization is the way. Free, what do you have to say?
Yeah, I mean, you're on the house of the Moorish King, and decentralization is the main theme here. So, I mean, we really get into the nuts and bolts of consciousness and what we view as the world and that consciousness that exists in it. And we have the story of a person who was able to transcend his own belief system or his own knowledge system and share with the rest of the world in a decentralized method. Outside of that, I mean, like you said, you said pretty much everything about Silk Road and where we've come today with the House of the Moorish King, you know what I mean, why we're bringing this episode to you with the I Tribe. So I guess what I could say now is, Harry, you talked about crowd sale or crowdfunding, and we have a new platform that we are also using right now called Ethereum, which allows you to create, you know, a coin, a decentralized autonomous organization, and it also allows you to set up a crowd fund or a crowd sale for your particular coin and for your organization. How is iTribe working this particular angle?
We actually have a long way to go. We have a lot to learn. Right now, we've used our own crowdfunding, you know, so to say, plug-in, because, you know, we've showed statistically 90-something percent of people that donate to a campaign click on a link to go to that campaign. They're not, like, cruising on Indiegogo or GoFundMe or something looking for cool things. They saw a link, they clicked, and they followed. So wherever that link went, regardless of what was hosting it, they were going to make that same donation. So it's important to to decentralize as well the crowdfunding platforms, not to go to the big guys who are going to take that 9% commission from you or something, but to do it yourselves. But so we've built our own system of, you know, this website, the iTribe, is backed by a non-for-profit with a non-for-profit board. So total transparency, any money donated goes right to the people, right through us. And right now we're just dealing with dollars, you know, people could donate dollars, but part of my, if we're building with you guys and working with you guys, is to learn a little bit more about what would be the most strategic way to implement a financial system if we have, philanthropists who, you know, we see Jewish philanthropy, they give billions of dollars a year, either philanthropists or community themselves trying to chip in, what would be the most convenient way to do that? So I'm still in the learning curve right here. Our website's in the beta phase, but I for sure see that there's a huge opportunity here when you're taking nations off a grid together with tribal leaders, with the people, with the confidence of the people. So we're still in the womb right now, which is exciting that we're having this conversation, you know?
Yes, sir. So, okay. I'll speak to that a bit. So I think the first thing, Harry, is any community that is interested and autonomy in this day and time, 2016, I like to refer to it as the electrified age, or, you know, more plainly, digitization. So what we're looking at is the advent of Bitcoin. If you've heard anything, I know you've heard a little, you've heard about Bitcoin. I'm not sure how much you've been able to get into it. Go ahead. Okay, so Bitcoin. The uniqueness about Bitcoin is a couple of different things. So first things first is the decentralization, that thing. When we're talking about decentralization and we're talking about a monetary system, currently monies all over the planet are issued via the central bank. So as you can see, there is a reason that it is called a central bank. That is a centralized model. And yes, because of that particular model, we are dealing with a lot of the issues on the planet that we have today. So what we're describing at this point is a system in which it is not issued from a central supplier, right? Now, the only way that that's done at this point in time, seeing as we're not talking about a physical object, I think that that has to be understood. This money, Bitcoin, is not a physical item. It is digital. Now, with that being said, I think that it would be just for anyone. If they're going to do themselves just, if they're going to do their due diligence, they should study Bitcoin. So decentralization, transparency is a second theme that is brought to Bitcoin. And this is a part of some of its value. Last but not least, I'm going to say cryptology. This is of value because we have a lot of concerns about security when we're talking about digitalization or the internet. We all have heard and all have seen a lot of the things that are happening across the planet due to this lack of security on the internet. Would you agree?
Correct. Yes, certainly.
So, a lot of different, we'll say, marks are being hit with those three: decentralization, transparency, and cryptology. These things, and again, that for the layman that's listening, we're talking about encryption. We're talking about encryption. So this naturally comes with Bitcoin. Decentralization naturally comes with Bitcoin. Transparency naturally with Bitcoin. Same thing with the cryptology. You don't have it without it, right? You don't have Bitcoin without it. With that being said, I would say that is where you should start if you were interested in having your own currency. Because Bitcoin, here is another theme. This is what, again, caused me to reach out to you, Harry. You mentioned open source when you were talking about spirituality. And I thought that was dope. I thought that was radical. I'm like, oh, he's going to apply, you know, computer science jargon to spirituality. You know, I thought that was really cool. I thought that was a good way to describe it. And everyone that is listening should realize what that means is there isn't a big I and a little U. Right? Most people are concerned that, you know, somebody is going to tell them what to do, when to do it, and why they're doing it. Right? They like to make up their own mind. They believe that they have the mind to make their own decisions, and I agree. So with that being said, Bitcoin is an open source protocol. This is important as well. Harry, last time that we talked, I mentioned to you that the word algorithm, the concept, that comes from the house of the Moorish king, right? And, you know, figuratively speaking. With that being said, that's an Islamic concept, that word, right, Arabic, in its nature and its origin. With that being said, Bitcoin is a protocol, an open source protocol, an open source algorithm. For those that are not familiar with what an algorithm is, it is a set of instructions, right? This is what a protocol is. A set of instructions. Now, once we put that in place, we're now talking about, as opposed to a organization of people, right, like a central bank, running the protocol themselves and we having to trust that they will run the protocol appropriately and not change it unnecessarily. This should be understood. I think that there is something very different about having that whole process automated as opposed to individuals being trusted to do the right thing. I have faith in humanity. I have faith in my fellow man. However, I would not want to put so much pressure on my fellow man that he's unable to perform. Harry, would you like for me to stop anywhere? Would you like to question anything that I've said so far? I've thrown out.
No, I like
concepts.
Everything you're saying. You're saying well. I found Bitcoin to be interesting. You know, just the fact that they call it like the Genesis coin or something, you know, right? So they're invoking spiritual, you know, biblical concepts to the first coin that was mined. And just even the term of mining a coin is so mysterious. Where are we mining it from? What's the formula? This is so outrageously interesting that it, you know, it sparked my curiosity. I feel it's capitalistic in nature, you know?
It is it's amazing. I think that's why we were able to take it along the Silk Road,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, this is why we were able to even present it in that fashion. It just so happened that the most notorious platform that was dealing with Bitcoin was called the Silk Road. I didn't come up with it myself. It was already in the ethers, and that brings about this concept that, you know, my co-host Free just mentioned, Ethereum. Ethereum, mm-hmm. the coin on that platform, Ethereum is the platform. The coin is called ethers. They call it the fuel. It's a virtual computer. Are you familiar, Harry, with virtualization? Do you understand, like, cloud computing, et cetera? You familiar?
I'm learning. I'm understanding it. Like, I haven't mastered it yet, but I'm definitely understanding this is something. You know, I'm just a little confused on, like you said, I don't know if I'm going backwards or forwards here, but you have something like the blockchain, right, or this technology. Mm-hmm. But this technology could be used by other people who want to make their own coin because the technology was open source, right?
That is absolutely correct.
Right, do you want to use Bitcoin or do you want to use their technology to create your own coin? That's the question I want. Or is it a hybrid? You know, can they interact? So all of these things I'm still really meditating on and trying to wrap my mind around.
All right, so I got one for you. In the future, there will be tens of millions of coins representing various projects, whether it be from a 6-year-old child all the way up to a 60-year-old who has their own blockchain in which they're using it as a database. So when you say blockchain, I don't want you to use a term that you don't know necessarily what it means. A blockchain mm-hmm. is a database. It is a
that
record.
Records transactions, that is, right?
That's right. But now I'm going to use another word, and you tell me where maybe they got this from. It's immutable.
Mm.
Yes, sir. The chain.
So that
the
means like they cannot, it can't be altered or changed or edited, right?
Precisely.
Mm-hmm.
They've been doubted with these qualities, right? The maker, which is a man, gave it that particular quality. It can't be changed. It's very technical how that actually comes about. Free might be able to say it in fewer words than me. Free, why is, in as few words as possible, how is it possible that the blockchain is immutable? How is it unchangeable?
Well, it's a ledger, right? And because of the ledger is set up on so many redundancies, like the ability to alter it would take, you know, computing power in the 40s of years, you know, to re-alter. And then let's say the person does find a way to re-alter it. Everyone on the blockchain, since it's decentralized, has to agree to go with this new alteration that happened. And we're all going to be like, nah, we're not going with that because that's not part of the original protocol. So that's how it's immutable. You know what I mean? Like, we all agree that that's the original way it came out on the Genesis block, and that's the way we're going to stick to it. Now, if you create another coin that has a different protocol behind it, so be it. But that's why Bitcoin is going to stay around as long as all the other coins are around, because it had that original immutable property to it. Now, another interesting thing that I think you guys mentioned was, you guys were just talking about it before I came in. That's it. We'll go in with that part. But when I come up with the other part, then I'll chime in on it, though. Oh,
for sure.
Okay, the fact that the creator was man of Bitcoin. We don't know that. Why don't we know that? Because Satoshi Nakamoto is anonymous. We don't
this
know
is
if
true.
Divine.
I will have to confess that.
Creator
I...
came in and coded something through a computer and sent it all to us. We don't know. You know
I will
mean?
Confess one thing. I will confess one thing. Two things. One, we do not know, Harry, this is, I think, the value of open source, because I think a lot of people that are new to this concept, they begin to shy away as soon as they come to the understanding that Satoshi Nakamoto is not necessarily a male, a female, or a group of people or even a bot, right? A computer bot, right? However, mm-hmm. Bitcoin is imperfect. It is not a perfect system. Hence, it has man written all over it. Right? There are
what happened to those first coins, stuff like that. Like, who knows?
You
that,
got
is that
it.
An example?
You got it. You got it. And that's really minimal as far as an example. That's minimal. Someone harboring any amount of coins, you have to realize, like any economy, you need for the money to be moving around and you need for other people to desire the money and have the money for you to be considered wealthy. If we don't think gold is wealthy and you got all the gold, you're not so wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's something that we have agreed upon, right? Unless it's something that I need to sustain my life, you're not immediately wealthy because you own a particular material item or a bunch of it. In this mm-hmm. case, it's the same. We're talking about a digital token that is being used to exchange value. It represents value. So, again, the value of the open source is if that does, you know, turn the stomach, if it does make you feel a certain kind of way or you just feel, you know, we'll say logically you come to the conclusion that Bitcoin is not for you for those reasons, surely you can take the protocol, tweak it, and make your own coin. So what do I mean by a tweak? Why am I even saying that an organization or a community should take on this cryptocurrency? So given that you're a student in computer science, there is not an issue with you making the algorithm behave in a different fashion. Is that clear?
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
So I'll give you an example. Are you aware of how many coins will be issued concerning the Bitcoin blockchain?
2 million or something?
21. Is that right, Free? 21 million?
Well, 21. I knew it was a 2-something
million. 21 million, and it'll end in 2141. So.
Okay. So what he has said basically is that these miners will no longer have a reason to so-called mine. What they'll be doing is validating the blockchain. This is what those miners are doing, right? Let me take the veil off of that, right? Are they mining? Not in the traditional sense. They don't have a machine. They're not digging into the ground mining. They are using computational power to solve math equations. The math equations are associated with the transactions that you mentioned, Harry. So in the future, after 2140, they will just be maintaining the ledger, mm-hmm. right? They're just maintaining the ledger. They're not mining anymore. They're not getting any Bitcoin for the computational power. The only incentive is in the fee that's associated with maintaining the ledger. So for each transaction, at current time, you can opt out of even putting in a fee, and you can send your transaction. However, it's minimal, about 2-3 cents, right? Half a penny to about 2-3 cents for any transactions, no matter how small or large.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, I was making a point that if you wanted to take it upon yourself to make your own coin, which is not an issue, you can alter the algorithm and make it behave differently. So you could say as opposed to 21 million tokens, you can make it, you know, an astronomical amount. You can tell it to, you know, actually have inflation built in, which is the opposite of Bitcoin, right? Because there is a finite amount of Bitcoin, inflation is not built in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Deflation is actually built into the monetary system. So we're talking about monetary systems. You can build in inflation, you can build in deflation, as opposed to hoping that people will do the right thing. It's an automation. It's an algorithm, right? That's what Bitcoin is. That's what Bitcoin is. So a lot of different elements. Like I said, I want to kind of start from the beginning. Decentralization. Free touched on how exactly is decentralized. First and foremost, it's decentralized because of the miners, so there's not one person maintaining a ledger. Currently, the central bank maintains the ledger. That's the thing that the banks cook, right? When the Lehman Brothers fell in 2008, it's because the book is the ledger itself, right? The accounting itself, they're allowed to keep that private. It's not transparent. So they did what we refer to as cook the books. Right? We already know that the Federal Reserve is based upon the fractal lending, right? So you don't even have the money in which is being loaned, right? Our country doesn't necessarily have the money that's being loaned. You mentioned this. You said it's a funny money system, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So with that being said, it removes that. We all can see the ledger. We can see where the money is going and who has what. Now, that's a point of contention for some people. Harry, if you had a Bitcoin wallet right now and I sent you some Bitcoin, I could click on your address and I can look at all the transactions. You follow?
Yeah, you could see what I got going on in my account, right?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I do have some. I think I have $20 left right now.
So with that being said, that's a point of contention. Okay, so we said it's decentralized. The next thing is cryptology. So, of course, we're dealing with the internet. We're talking about digital money. How are we going to secure that? Well, encryption is built upon it. Encryption. This is the highest form of security that we have online. And this has created a situation that we see right now with Apple and the FBI. The FBI is asking for Apple to unencrypt the cell phone of the bomber, right? This is what's happening. So this is, definitely you're going to see it all over the news, the idea of encryption, right? President Barack Obama was at South by Southwest saying we need to have a happy medium somewhere, right? Like, they're asking for a backdoor at Apple, right? So there's going to be three parties involved, and this is absolutely against decentralization, the third party. But, debatable. What were the other themes that we brought up? We have decentralization. We have encryption. We have open source. And last but not least, it escapes me at the moment. However, there are about four qualities that are making cryptocurrency the way of the future that I don't think anyone is going to be able to ignore. Whether they deal with Bitcoin, Harry, is unknown. I don't want to say that Bitcoin is the absolute future, but I do know for a fact the technology underlining it, which is the blockchain, that's not going anywhere. That's being implemented every single day. Right? I just came back from a Bitcoin expo there in Boston at the beginning of the month. IBM was there. Fidelity was there, as well as NASDAQ. So, Harry, now I want to expand the conversation just a bit more. Do you see why those people are there, why those entities, those institutions are there? IBM, Fidelity, as well as NASDAQ?
Hey, thanks for unmuting me. I got disconnected again. As far as your questions, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why they're there. There's, and I think we could spend time decoding, and I think you're looking for something specific, but, I have thoughts about, just the nature of the human trauma of, non-trusting other humans, which evolves into, private entities and power and ego and all those things. But these entities are here to, to act as a, fingers or hands for behind-the-scenes humans or entities to do their will and their bidding, looking like legitimate organizations.
Yes, sir. Free, you got the floor.
Well, yeah, all of these different organizations are trying to implement the blockchain in some way or another because it's trustless.
I was told that certain banks are trying to now do their own, open source type of thing, but really it's not open source, but, trying to make it seem that way or something.
Well, yeah, they're because of it's making such a big wave throughout the financial industry right now and throughout the tech industry. It's really it still hasn't made a big impact on like, you know, the social industry yet, but it's bubbling up to that. But yeah, the banks are trying to take advantage of it before it can really blossom into this really decentralized thing that we want to see it become, you know, because if they can captivate the minds of the people and just, you know, switch the system from Chase, you know, your Chase credit card over to having a Chase wallet, you know what I mean? That's all they're going to try to do with it, you know what I mean? So that's why we're out here evangelizing decentralization.
You get the spiritual reference there, right? The connotation there, right, Eric?
Yeah, I'm loving it.
So now I'll tell you, seeing as I was there. So they were very open. And the banking consortium that was there is called R as in Robert, 3, right? The number, R3. You can look consortium of banks that was also present there at MIT. And shortly, the way they described it, Harry, they said, you know, they got like a 1969 Camaro and they want to supercharge it. Right? They want to put a new engine in that puppy. That's what they're talking about. They realize that, yeah, it doesn't make any sense that it takes 3 to 5 days for a bank to settle, you know, a payment. Right? You ask for a refund, they tell you 3 to 5 business days. For what?
Right, right.
Right? Right? So they realize, like, they got to do something. And they don't necessarily want to change. However, they'd like for things to be more efficient. And they realize that that is one of the basic values of the technology. So, yeah, you know, that should be understood. One of the first things, banks are looking to make their institutions more efficient. Now, when we start talking about IBM, these people are involved with, you know, electronics in the house, right, the home. So they're talking about using the technology behind what is referred to as the Internet of Things. Harry, are you familiar with the Internet of Things?
I'm familiar with it, but I'm not sure, you know, it's going to evolve into its own thing, I think. But, yeah, so far I get it. This is like quantum thought right here. You know, these things are going to keep evolving and spiraling out into things that we can't fathom. So where we're going to be 10 years from now, I don't know if we can comprehend that today.
Oh, yeah. And right now I'm demonstrating the utility of the technology that's underlying Bitcoin. They don't need Bitcoin to do the Internet of Things. Is that understood?
Right, right, correct.
Same thing can be said about R3. They don't require, they'll make their own coin and utilize that as a method of transacting between themselves. Is that clear?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. So then we have NASDAQ. Right, the stock exchange. So essentially, I witnessed a man who is basically talking about removing the wolves of Wall Street. He is working on software that will allow for individuals to engage with corporations directly. You no longer need a broker.
Mm-hmm.
However, NASDAQ is still trying to, you know, create the blockchain and they'll probably control all of the nodes. They'll probably centralize the concept of mining. You know, that kind of thing will still exist with them. However, they wish to implement the technology. Last but not least is Fidelity. And Fidelity, you know, they're realizing that all types of financial transactions, we're really talking now, Harry, about money market accounts, right, IRAs, Roth accounts, things of this nature, being maintained on the blockchain.
Wow, right, wow.
Yeah. They were all there.
So interesting.
So now with that being said, I urge you, in fact, Harry, if you are going to move into the future and have the degree of efficiency, you know, we were talking on the first episode, I thought it was valuable. And I actually want to ask you this question right now. Harry, as opposed to the word work, you know, we were talking on the previous episode, you know, how technology will come into society. There may come a time where we're doing today what we call work, less of it. As opposed to work, Harry, what would you call it? What do you think it's going to be?
I'd call it interacting, you know, doing or experiencing. So that'd be a great way to look at it because, you know, the human, we're still created where we need water, we need food. We haven't evolved out of that. We have to go to the bathroom. There's things we have to do, right? We have to, you know, still sleep in nets so mosquitoes don't get us. Or, you know, just for the time being, there's all these functions that we still have to be doing and to maintain and sustain ourselves. So we have to interact with the world around us to make sure that we can continue on our existence. So it's, and you're right, you know, they have this new song out, you know, you hear people singing it, it goes like work, 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 work or something, you know, it's a modern hip hop song.
Yeah, Rihanna,
and,
Rihanna.
Right, and I'm like, this is the worst type of poison ever because, you know, we're subconsciously like singing ourselves that like this is okay, like this is what we have to be doing, but that's keeping us in the past. So we definitely have to evolve out of that and learn how to interact with the world around us, as far as, you know, the world of electricity, the world of food, the world of commerce, and just have interactions with them. And we should enjoy it. If someone's not enjoying their interactions with the world, then they have to reevaluate their neurological pathways in their brain to make sure they have, you know, they're flowing correctly, that they have what they need to experience. So whether they have traumas that they have to deal with or et cetera, but our time and space should be, you know, we should be in a state of ecstasy naturally all throughout our existence, throughout our interactions.
Definitely sounds like heaven to me. Free, what you got?
Yeah, I think that's what the video tries to build on, but like you said, in a poisonous, toxic way. I mean, it's like saying all day I work. Well, yeah, if you're living sustainable, yes, all day is work. You're checking the pH levels of your plants. You know, you're checking your animals to make sure that everything's moving good in that ecology. You're checking on your drone feed to make sure that nobody's on your property trying to set any fires or you're looking for more arable land. I mean, you could think about it in a more positive way. How are you resetting, you know, your code values to make sure that your pH levels of your hydroponics are working properly? I mean, all of this stuff could be work all day. But like you said, you could be having fun doing it as opposed to having this thought of, oh, well, you know, I'm just going to turn in, turn up, you know what I mean? And that's it, you know, like, yeah, it's crazy, though, but, you know. What are we going to do?
Well, no, I understand. I have, sorry to interrupt. I have children, you know, I have two kids. And when I'm taking care of my kids, it's not work. I actually enjoy it, you know. So you wake them up, you brush their teeth, you make them food, the kid's got to change his diaper, all those things. You can't call that work.
Right. No, like I said, you redefine it. If anything,
exactly.
You're saying having an experience as opposed to this 9-to-5. Or this all day money hustle or whatever like that. Like you said, the finer things in life are what you would call, you know, your earthly work to do. You know what I'm saying? But like you said, it's not rigorous. It's not a negative thing. It's something you enjoy doing, like taking care of your children, taking care of your animals, taking care of your plants, you know, taking care of the people in your community. So
I don't want to turn this religious, but, you know, Harry, I think you might be best to speak on this. Isn't that, I've heard, you know, being a part of the conscious community, this may be a misinterpretation, but I've heard that, in fact, that was a, quote-unquote, a curse that was put upon Adam, that he would have to work. Is that incorrect? You know, break that down a little bit, if you don't mind.
Oh, that's great, right. What's the curse of Adam is he's got to sweat from his brow to get bread from the land. Which basically means work. He's got to really break his back to sustain himself. Where we believed his natural setting was his bread, quote unquote, grew from the earth, which means the earth gave forth and he was able to take from it. There was a symbiotic relationship. Something got disturbed on that. Something was removed and messed up that flow. And we believe, you know, we're on a trajectory to return to there. Mentally and physically, which is what they call Edenic consciousness, you know, consciousness of Eden, which involves not having to work for your bread and your food. So, and I like what you did there, because we have to redefine, you know, the Torah, the Bible. We have to redefine God, because when you really examine the narrative, you really see it's about resources, plants, and our existence, our sustainable existence on Earth. A lot of other things were added by, you know, humans made of flesh and blood over time. And when you just came right down to it, which is the most humanitarian story ever, returning back to a place where we don't use this word work to live.
Flames. Flames. Harry, I think we have officially melted the mic. You know, you've actually stuck it out with us 30 minutes longer than what we would normally have our guests on the line. I definitely appreciate you being with us. If you want to stay along, we have another 15 minutes or less. We can close out the conversation, but if you definitely have to get back to life, we will allow for that as well. Let me know.
I'm chilling. If you want to just bring up one final moment or point or topic, if any questions, you know, we could wrap it up in the next few minutes, but I got a little bit of wind left.
Sure, sure. You know, for the audience that is listening, you can definitely hit one if you'd like to ask Harry a question. Otherwise, I will make a final comment about some of the things that we've already been discussing. So I'll let the callers do what they're going to do. I'm going to give them a moment. Okay.
Hey, sorry, Harry. Someone really doesn't want us to talk.
It is all good. So what I'll do, Harry, with the last moment, and I'll make sure I leave some room for free to make a closing comment and you as well, especially for the contact information for iTribe. So the Internet of Things, Harry, you said that earlier, you know, you're familiar, but it is evolving, and so evolving concept, and I absolutely agree. But I want to make it a little more apparent to the listening audience what is being described right now, and I have an example that we can associate with IBM. So IBM has presented, and I kind of like to change it just a little bit to make it more practical. They'd like to use the concept of a washing machine, a smart washing machine. However, I'd like to use a smart car. I think more people might be familiar and aware of a smart car as opposed to a device that is, you know, not had by many, a smart washing machine. So what IBM was talking about, in a nutshell first, I'll start there in the nutshell, machine-to-machine payments. Machine-to-machine payments kind of acts like fuel. Like if it doesn't have enough currency on the inside of the machine stops, right? Kind of like a vending machine or a video game, an arcade, you know, that you put money in, and when the money runs out, you can no longer play, right? So let me kind of paint a picture about the Internet of Things and what that's about. So imagine you have a vehicle, a form of transportation. And this transportation is smart, right? A smart car. The smart car is smart enough, obviously, to start before you get to it, right? The smart car is just like cars right now that have a dashboard and, you know, they notify you if you have low oil, right, low air, right? You got the check engine light, right, gas, all of these kind of things, that whole dashboard there. It kind of lets you know what that machine is doing, right? In this case, just imagine, you know, the car being able to let you know that it's low in air, you know, and it needs to see the mechanic, right? It needs a brake pad, et cetera. So at that point, obviously it goes a step further. This machine can now schedule its own appointments. It can actually let you know when the mechanic is available. And it goes a step further. Most of these mechanics are automations as well. You know, it doesn't necessarily require the hand of a man to screw a bolt. It doesn't necessarily require that. So with that being said, most of these facilities that are servicing the vehicles are going to be automations as well. We go a step further. The same way that we have Uber today, maybe your car can tell you that it can make itself available and make some income while you're doing that labor of love, we'll call it, right? You no longer need the car. You make the car available for others, right? Today it is referred to as a sharing economy. I think that that's a powerful message as well. I think that the children of God share. I think that's why they have a state of abundance, in fact. If one is sharing, then one is not in need. Right? If we are sharing, then one is not in need. One can truly experience abundance. But however, you know, we're going to put it in its common context and maybe even a capitalistic concept. So the car is making itself available to drive people around, right? It's a smart car. This is what IBM was talking about. And what we should really start to think to ourselves is how much of these things do we actually need to own? How much of these things do we actually need to, you know what I'm saying? The Internet of Things, I think, is a step in the way of abundance. Mm. It will allow for, first and foremost, it will allow for the resources to be optimized. I think a lot of our resources go down the drain. We're squandering much of, you know, our birthright. You mentioned that earlier. I think we're squandering our birthright.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the Internet of 100%. Things, if given, if done correctly, we always have to keep that in mind. As long as it's done correctly, abundance will be the experience. Right, for every human being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's where it's at right now. Go ahead, definitely. Yes, sir. It is. It's an amazing concept. It's an amazing concept. Free, did you have anything that you wanted to add before we close out?
No, not really. We can get into the brother's contact information.
All on you, Harry.
Cool. Yeah. So listen, this is an evolution. I expect we should be continuing this conversation. You know, in these next few months, I have some very big plans this summer in Israel. I'm gonna have a lot of powerful people together for a conference about the launch of the iTribe. So we should definitely stand by because it's gonna be an evolution of what technology we're gonna be implementing to take our communities off the grid together in one fell swoop. So gentlemen, you know, this is just the opening. This is the start of something. Fantastic. Let's keep it building.
True indeed. As we close out, I want to say peace and love to all the listeners. Please remember, this is the House of the Moorish King, capital of the conscious community. Peace and love.
Peace.